It's time!
Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider. And you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the Godfathers of Podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
He is the tears to my fears, the pet shop to my boys, the white in my stripes. That's Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell. What up, Tid?
What is going on, Donnie? How you doing this week, brother?
I'm doing okay, man. Yeah. I cannot complain.
The green screen has evolved into something new, I see. It's ever-changing. Now it's a little bit more of a close-up.
I got to keep you on your toes, brother. Wow. I was going to tell you a story, but I think I'll save it for maybe later on about a really bad edible experience that I had last week, because I know that you would get a kick out of it. But maybe I'll save that for Nick for the end of the show.
Teasers.
gotta hook him in, right? I do want to quickly mention.
Yeah,
if you're watching this on godfathersofpodcasting.com as opposed to listening to us everywhere else, you can see that I am wearing the product from blackborkusa.com, and we have a whole bunch of samples here that I could show you, like the hot pink number, and we have this very simple white one, and I got this nice camo one, and this one, which is like beige and black. And in case you missed the talk last week or haven't seen it on my socials, the really cool thing about Black Bork USA is all of their hats are customizable. You can remove the patch and you can replace it with a completely different patch, either one that you purchase off of their website or that you have custom made just for you, which is really, really cool. It's a neat product. I've never seen anything like it before. I'm super stoked about it. I've been rocking my Black Bork hats all week long. If you want to pick one up, go to blackborkusa.com. And of course, do not forget, if you are like us of the fuzzy-faced variety, you want to go to baronialbeard.com, get your beard. There we go. Let's focus. Focus.
Focus, Donnie. Focus. Focus.
I'm trying. Focus. It's not showing on camera. Baronialbeard.com. You get your beard oils, your beard balms, your conditioners, whatever you need to make your beard look full and thick and luscious. Just go to baronialbeard.com. I love the stuff. I know Tid loves it too. You're partial to their soaps, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all been fantastic. Everything that I tried, it works great on the beard, works great on the skin, doesn't help the face one bit. Still look exactly the same.
Yeah, no, it's not going to make you better looking. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm sorry if you're looking for miracles. It doesn't do that, but it does great job of doing what it says that it's going to do. I just expect a little bit more.
Yeah, regarding the face, you should probably wear a Black Bork hat and just pull it down real low.
You know what would be really cool is when all of the people start custom ordering their Godfathers of Podcasting patches to go on the front of these hats. And you should be able to just do that online on their site soon enough. I'm sure Donnie's working that out.
It's in the works.
I know.
We are so excited, ladies and gentlemen, for this week's featured guest, because he doesn't do this kind of stuff. And you know what, Tid, without further ado, why don't we bring him in?
Absolutely.
It's time right now, ladies and gentlemen, for the big hello. And this week's guest is someone who I met when he was just 13 years old as a grade 9 student at my high school. At first, all I thought was, well, he's the little kid with the floppy blonde hair, and he's Adam's little brother. Adam was the drummer in my pal's band, and I used to hit up all their gigs, and this kid was there too. But it didn't take long for him to flip the switch from Adam's little brother to a unique larger-than-life personality. He joined the school's drama company, which, of course, I was a part of, and we did this huge musical together. And anywhere I'd see him, I'd see our mutual pal, who has the best name ever, Hilding Nanopergasm. He and Hilding would be in lockstep all over the school at rehearsals or walking into rooms where some of the seniors would just be hanging out, and then they would just randomly burst out into song. And I was like, whoa, this kid has something. Now, there were times I'd be wondering, where the hell was he? I was told he was sick. I didn't realize he was dealing with Crohn's disease, and that forced him to miss a ton of school. When he was around, I'd constantly be listening to him and Hilding going on and on about their love for Nirvana, Our Lady Peace, Beck, Oasis, Head, and others. When his parents split up, he would go visit his dad on the weekends and realize Pops was throwing these huge raves. He became ingrained in the underground rave scene and found a deep love for drum and bass. He always had a deep, burning love for music, but I think it was probably around that time that he realized music was a core piece of who he was. He was part of so many bands, including Holy Grail, Evil Widow, which, by the way, I filmed and directed their only music video, The Old Boys Club, Funny Guy Popcorn, Thread, Ash Happily, Team of Captains, and, as he knows, my personal favorite, Quicksonic. I wore out my Quicksonic CD to the point where it wasn't even usable anymore. He was just 29 years old when he felt a different calling and went to join a monastery, going through what he has called a miracle year. Somewhere along the way, he met Cuban Kebab and Chuck Topping, which led to the formation of Canadian alternative rock supergroup USS. Ubiquitous Synergy Seeker had an incredible run of a decade and a half topping alternative rock charts and allowing them to tour all over, including stops in Germany and the UK, where his family is from. His old pal Hilding is now a bigwig at Rogers Sportsnet and had arranged to use a USS song, Never Stop, as the theme for the NHL, and it has been for the last three seasons. For a kid from small town Unionville, Ontario, who was on skates before he could walk, this was a dream come true. USS made the decision to go into hibernation and work on different things, Cuban Kebab on a solo project. And our guest, well, he wanted to work on himself, deal with some personal issues. About a year ago, he found himself in a hospital with a life-threatening staph infection. Doctors worked on him and shared the reality that he may lose his left hand. So he did what anyone would do in a life or death situation. He started singing his favorite alternative rock songs while DJing electronica with his right hand. This is where he had an epiphany about his next musical project. And that's where his newest creation, Fraxinus Prime, came from. Fraxinus Prime will be playing at the Redwood Theater in Toronto on May 11th. Ladies and gentlemen, doing his first ever podcast. I broke it all down to the nuts and bolts. Music hits harder than the Indy Colts. Everyone loving it, kids and adults. His mind is shocking. I get electric jolts. He's a man of peace. No time for insults. It's all about the journey, not the results. Now give it up to my man. This is Ashley Buchholz.
Hello, guys. Thank you, Don. That was a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much, Don.
You could say it was the best you've ever had, but you don't do these, so it's the first you've ever had.
The best, only, and you set a high bar, Don. Thank you.
Yeah, dude, yeah, the next person is going to definitely have to come up with something. It's going to be 20 something minutes else. Long.
Yeah, you should have a captivating story about your life. Jesus. Yeah, man. Hey, just before we start, something that I kind of like to do is I just wanted to give a shout out to some of the people that are the reason why I'm here. And that would be Leonard Cohen. I want to shout out Gord Downie. I want to shout out Chris Martin. I want to shout out Noel Gallagher. I want to shout out Kurt Cobain. I want to shout out Mark Linkus, Sparkle Horse. I want to shout out Beck. I want to shout out Doug Flutie. I want to shout out Chris Hadfield. I want to shout out Bjork. I want to shout out Wesley Willis. And I want to shout out Daniel Johnston. Thank you, guys.
So just major inspirations in your life.
Yeah, yeah. Those would be the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of my being.
I love that Wesley Willis made that list.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Not a week goes by that I don't watch my favorite Wesley Willis documentary. He's dear to my heart. I thank Cuban Kebab for introducing me to Wesley Willis. What a spirit, what a soul.
That's awesome. Ash, thanks for taking the time to do this. I know that we chatted about this for a while about, you know, the logistics of you coming on and doing this, because mm-hmm. this isn't something that you're used to. I mean, for 15 years, 14, 15 years, whatever it was, USS was mm-hmm. As hot can be. And you always took the approach of, you know what? I have people that can take care of this media stuff for me. I'll be doing my own thing. Is that pretty much how it went?
I think, you know, when a soldier is in boot camp, he's in boot camp. And my life up to this point has been just, oh, there we go. That's my dad calling. My life up to this point has been, has just required a lot of boot camp. Just to keep my head in the game. So, you know, as USS was hot, I was in hot yoga, just keeping it dialed in. But here we are. It's a beautiful day.
The only reason that I even found out about Fraxinus Prime and found out mm-hmm. afterwards that after all these years, Ash is finally online. He's on the internet. He's got an Instagram account, which was never your thing, right? I only found that out because a few months ago, I got invited by friends of the show Altered by Mom to go up to Stouffville and attend Winter Song, the music festival. And I found out I had just missed this performance by Fraxinus Prime. And friends of mine said, oh, you should have seen Fraxinus Prime. It was so great. And I was like, oh, who's that? And I look at the event program and it says Ashley Buchholz. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. And I had this little like, oh my God, Ash has a whole new thing going.
Yeah. So Don, you know, as you touched on, when I was in high school, I was 13 when Nevermind came out by Nirvana. So the first chords that I learned was an E and a G chord. So when you spoke about Hilding, the first thing that happened is we wrote a song called I Like Dogs.
I remember it well.
So it was played one single time when you said we'd pop into a room and we'd play it. So this is actually the world debut of I Like Dogs. And here it goes like this. It went, I like dogs. I like dogs. I know this dog and he's big. I know this dog and he's small. I know this cat that smells. So I don't like cats at all. I like dogs. I like dogs, and if you talk about Wesley,
I remember that like it was yesterday.
So that was the first song that I ever wrote with Hilding. So what winds up happening is that my father, when my parents split up, you know, you go visit dad on the weekend. My dad bought an abandoned 1970s ski lodge behind a landfill in Maple outside of Toronto. So it was in a valley. So unbeknownst to me, I didn't know what the rave scene was in like 93, 94, 95. So when I'm like 14, 15 years old, I'm listening to Nirvana in my bedroom, playing along on my brother's drum set, listening to Head, listening to Our Lady Peace, Beck. And I go to visit my dad one weekend and there's a 15,000 person rave, like a Citrus proper enormous rave. I'm helping my dad unclog toilets. I'm going in the experimental room. It's drum and bass, progressive house, trance, experimental music. My head is blown. I'm just a kid that's playing hockey and listening to Nirvana, and nobody in the mainstream knows about this underground scene. So pretty much what winds up happening when you said you came to Winter Song, Don, is one of my longtime collaborators, Chuck Topping, when I met him in 2004, I finally met someone for the first time, guys, who could make electronic music. Since I was listening to Nirvana as a teenager and I was hearing this drum and bass music every time I visited my dad, my mom had no idea. I was surrounded by people blasted on ecstasy. And I'm like 15 years old. We're talking, I was at the rave from the moment the first piece of equipment was unloaded on the truck till the last piece of garbage was picked up. I saw the entire thing. And so anyhow, what winds up happening is it incubates and I say, I want to hear Nirvana and Oasis and Beck in all these different rooms at the rave. And I wanted to put it together. So when I met Chuck, he was the first person that I met that knew how to make electronic music, because Chuck was, his background was in Iceberg Radio, in Progressive House, in Downtempo. He knew how to make the music. So when I got back from that monastery that I was staying at when I was 29, I sort of had this calling to live a monastic life. So I lived with these monks and just simplified my life. All I had was like a backpack of clothes and a bed and a desk and my guitar, and that's it. I got out of there. My friend dared me to record my best song. I said my best song is I wrote called Hollow Point Sniper Hyperbole. I went over to Chuck's. We produced music for it. My friend Brian said, I dare you to give that song to everyone in music in Toronto. And if that song doesn't blow up, you need to go back to school, Ash. And that song went to the top of the charts. It went Coldplay, Viva La Vida, USS, Solid Point Sniper Hyperbole, and Weezer, Pork and Beans. We were on the main stage at Edge Fest. We were at festivals everywhere, and it just started the ride. So I'm actually sitting here now in Vice Locker, aka Chuck Topping's podcast studio. He's allowed me to jump in to learn this technology. Thank you guys for letting me break my cherry here. But so John, just to pull it full circle, Intimate and Electronic, the show that we threw in Latcham Hall in Stouffville was the full life manifestation of me going to these raves as a teenager, going the experimental room, seeing people, girls with butterfly wings, and seeing people like handing out stickers and just loving each other. There's no barrier. It wasn't about standing and looking at a stage and there's some kind of idol worship between We're the crowd and you're the performer. So when the thing happened with my hand, see where we go. It's pretty good. I can bend it that far. So I can play all the chords, which is cool. So just to tie that all together, that love of Nirvana and Oasis and Coldplay and those melodies that just are my they're my Rushmore, as the movie line goes. That intimate and electronic experience is something I've always dreamed of, is pulling those melodies together with that environment and throwing parties like that where it's not about idol worship. And so here we are, guys.
You gave us so much to unpack there, Ash. And I know Tid probably wants to jump on, but before he does, let me just say, I can think back to when I was about 19 or 20 years old, and Tid and I were hanging out back then, and I can't remember who it was, Tid, but someone offered you and I an opportunity to go be bouncers at a rave. And I remember the look on your face, and you were like, that is a special kind of hell.
It is because I had enough of our crew that was working these when we would go by there after hours, places like what was the docks before it was the docks, when it was still just the warehouse and they were running raves there. Been Liberty Village, there was just warehouses and they would run, run shows there overnight. So we would get off work from the clubs and then go by there. And it was just like, this is a different world, man.
Hey, do you want to know what's, Chris, you want to know what's hilarious? Is so something that that Vice Locker and or me and Chuck strategically have implemented is that our parties start at 6 p.m. and they end at midnight. They don't start at midnight and end at 6. And that's now.
These are raves for over 40.
It's still a beautiful experience that people want to have.
Oh, for sure. But I just remember being 19 years old and going with Tid to one of these events and thinking, I feel like I'm 65. Like, I'm too old for this crowd.
It's wild. Well, I mean, so this is what we fundamentally designed is that there's a lot of people. We don't have to talk about, oh, we're getting old and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
No. We just keep different hours. I wake up at 3:45 every day now. That's what time I start my day. I live monk hours. Wow. And so this is just in alignment with how my life and times work. And anyways, it's super cool. It also allows my parents, who are in their 70s, all my mom's friends who held me as a baby, they get to come to the show and they get to experience this wild, new, interesting thing. And everyone's not hammered and railed off on drugs and stuff like that. So it's really a cool experience. It's very creative. Awesome. And we have a graffiti wall. We have a hug station. We have all of these. We give out lollipops. We give out butterfly wings. We build a community over the course of an evening, and it's just, it's so exciting not to have that third wall on stage that I am the star and you are the disciple. Right. I'm out there hanging out. How are you? Hey, have you met this guy? This guy has a fucking 1960s boat that he refurbished. No way. I fish. Where do you fish? boom, now they're hanging out talking.
I love it. It's awesome, it's a community. Tid, yeah. You should work the hug station, Tid.
I do work the hug station. No, we have
I'm saying Tid.
Oh, sure. Tim. Oh, yeah, yeah. Chris.
I mean, listen.
Tidwell, for sure. The bear hug station.
Yeah. 100%. Let's do this. Listen, Ash, you mentioned the monk lifestyle and the monastery. And yeah. I got to know, because you've said it a couple of times now. Please explain to me, first of all, what drove you to that? What sent you on that path to join a monastery? It's not every day that a white guy from Markham is joining a monastery. What's up with that?
Well, thanks for asking, Chris. It's a part of my life that I haven't, shared a lot about. And the first person that I shouted out was Leonard Cohen.
Right.
Leonard Cohen, when he was in his 50s, moved to a Zen Buddhist monastery in California on Mount Baldy. He just left at the peak of his fame. He said, I gotta change gears. He just needed to be there. And I felt the same kind of pull. And there was this sort of static, like, you know, in the radios between stations, that was always kind of just sitting here all the time. And I just would get myself to the YMCA. I'd get myself to hockey practice. I would live with that sensation in spite of it, but it always felt like there was something that just wasn't quite. There's an Our Lady Peace song, and Rain Made It says, "I hope to God I figure out what's wrong." And I hope to God I figure out what's wrong. And that sensation that wouldn't go away. I tried everything to make it go away, you know, on either side of the ledger, as we do. I think a lot of people have that experience. And when I saw Leonard Cohen, these interviews with him after he left the monastery after 5 years, I was like, there's a sparkle in his eye. There's a calmness to the man. There's a peace to the man. And there's a groundedness and a centeredness to the man. And I just got rid of all my stuff. I didn't have anything. And I just went to this Vipassana silent meditation center, and I just lived there. And I came out with a really clear vision again. And
so, Ash, how much of your life now? I know you mentioned waking up at 3 something in the morning, but
3:45.
Okay,
yeah.
3:45. So, how much of your life now still echoes that lifestyle that you learned when you were at the monastery?
It's like the backbone and the anchor of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember, Don, I almost became a monk, like a Theravadan Thai monk. They're the most like extreme in terms of you give up your name, you shave your head, you give up all your possessions, you live in a little hut in the woods, and it's like a renunciate. You renounce everything. And I remember I spoke to the abbot, that's the head monk at the monastery, and I said, I'm in a bit of a pickle. Ajahn means teacher in Pali, Ajahn. So I said, I'm in a bit of a pickle, Ajahn. My calling is through music and song and singing and my voice and words. And I feel a pull to monastic life where you're in silence all the time. You don't speak, and I don't know what to do. What should I do? And he said, Ash, it's a little bit of a tougher assignment, but I think you got to be able to bring the monastery wherever you go. And you just make everywhere the monastery. And actually, I'm getting goosebumps a bit right now, because it has been very challenging. Because this is I walked into a gas station, guys, after my first long meditation retreat. That place is a crack den for trauma. It's fat, it's sugar, it's salt, it's caffeine. You don't need anything except maybe the mixed nuts in a gas station. Like, it's just preying on your, like,
maybe the gas.
Yeah, it's like that thing that, like, trying to stop that thing. It's like, you don't need a chocolate bar right now. You don't need a bag of chips. You don't need a creamsicle. You don't need a Coca-Cola. Those are all wonderful things in moderation, but it was so much easier for me to be in the monastic place and not have that feeling anymore. So
you're literally Kwai Chang Kane of music. Then you're like Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, where you ran off and like, you know what I mean? And they were like, no, run free, grasshopper. You
walk the earth.
Yeah. And then and now this is what you're doing. That is wild to me, dude.
Yeah.
Well, and so, once you start, I try to wherever I go, guys. We recorded a lot of music in Niagara Falls, and there's a Chinese 10,000 Buddhas monastery. I'd volunteer there and weed the garden. I go out to Ottawa. There's a Theravadin monastery. You go there and you help friggin' chop wood. In Markham, there's a Sri Lankan Buddhist monastery. Actually, one of the monks, his last name is Yanapragasam, which is Hilding. Yanapragasam is the guy that Don spoke about that... he's been a really important guy in my life. We wanted to have him on the podcast, Chris, because Hilding was the guy that I wrote I Like Dogs with. When I got super sick as a kid, I couldn't play hockey anymore. Hilding and I, we played road hockey and we told jokes. Then when we were in the play together, because I couldn't play hockey anymore, my mom said, hey Ash, I think you need to still be involved with people. We can't have you just sitting in your rooms like by yourself sick. So I joined the play. That's where I met Don. It was a musical, Chris. So I started singing because I loved Nirvana. I picked up my stepdad's guitar. I learned about a girl with the E chord and the G chord, wrote I Like Dogs. And the rest is here we are. When we fast forward a whole bunch of years, Hilding Yanapragasam, that awesome, wonderful, half Sri Lankan, half Norwegian guy, calls me, Chris, and he says, Ash, Sportsnet needs a new theme song for NHL hockey. And I'm like, wow, that'd be a dream come true. All I ever wanted to do as a kid was play in the NHL. But I accidentally had this music career, so I couldn't be a pro hockey player, but I got to be a pro musician. He said, we're about to send a blast out to all the publishers, and they're going to submit all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. He said, you happen to have a song. I go, I think I have a song. We just had got back from Nashville, and we wrote the song called Never Stop. And I send it to Hilding and he goes, this is the song. And we hit it like the first song. And now that, and then that became the song for Sportsnet for all of the NHL. And it was super, super wild.
Amazing. That's all fantastic. But I got to rewind just a second here.
Yeah.
Because you said you were in a play with.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I knew he wasn't going to let that slide.
What was Donnie's role in this play?
Oh, okay. You know what, Chris? It was a book that was actually pretty heavy-duty stuff for high school kids. It was called Working by Studs Terkel. So Studs Terkel traveled the United States. He interviewed hundreds of people that did every different kind of job in like that you can work. And so the book was one page of asking people, what's the most important thing in your life? What gives your life meaning? What gives your life purpose? It was a really cool book. They turned it into a musical. So instead of there being like eight characters, there's like 50 characters. Everyone's playing five or six different. Like I was like a newsboy. I was like a firefighter's son. I was like five different things. And you would sing and speak from the vantage point of what gave your life meaning from that position. So what were you, Don?
I can't remember. I was Charlie Blossom, the hippie. And I sat cross-legged on top of a 15-foot high scaffold. Remember that?
The scaffolding. Yeah.
There was scaffolding on the corner of the stage. I sat balanced on top of this thing. Our drama teacher constantly having a panic attack because I wasn't harnessed. They would never allow this today.
Yeah.
I wasn't harnessed or anything. I'm just sitting cross-legged on top of two bars, like the L of the two bars, and I'm just sitting there balancing like in a meditative pose, and I'm doing this stoned out hippie monologue about a hippie that works in the mail room of a big corporate building.
Cool, that's a conflict.
And how one day he thinks he might just snap and kill everybody. It was such a deep monologue for a teenager to deliver.
Guys, to this day, so Chris, at the end of the play, there's a chorus line of all the characters come out and sing a song called See That Building. I still know the song because as an adult now, okay, so this is how the song went. See that building. I did the job. I would know. See that building. Wait, see that building.
You had it right.
What was it? See that building. I did the job. I was the one. See that building. Count from the left. One, two, three, stop. That's where I work. Everyone should have something to point to, something to be proud of. Look what I did. See what I done. I did the job. I was the one. See that building. I did the job. And everyone should have something to be proud of. Anyways, yeah. So,
and remember, we used to sing in rehearsal and it would piss off the director. We used to sing it as See That Hilding.
Oh, yeah, that's right. See That Hilding. That was
because Hilding was in the play with us and she got there so
was
hot.
All, there was
you
all
better kinds not of do that on performance night. You better not do that. She got so pissed.
That was that was my one and only play, Chris. That's a good like icebreaker question. If you ask someone, have you ever been in a play, or you say, have you ever been in a parade?
Have you been in a parade, Ash?
Have either of you been in a parade?
Yes.
You've been in a parade, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay, do tell.
So in school, I wasn't a drama kid, but I did play music and I played in the drum line. And our high school, our drum line, we got picked. So I was before moving back to Las Vegas, where I'm originally from, I spent some time in Washington State. When I was living there, the high school that I went to in grade 9, the person who ran the music department there also was the head of the music department for the school district. So they were filming a movie in Spokane, Washington back then, a movie called Vision Quest about high school wrestling. And he used his school band to be in the movie. We were the pep band for the wrestling matches in the movie. So we got to hang out and meet Matt Modine, and it's great. And we're high school kids and it's fantastic. Well, they also had a parade later on, and we got asked to play in the parade with our drumline and our marching band.
And when's the last time you played the drum?
Sat behind a kit, maybe at least 20 years.
So fun fact, guys, is my partner in Sublime Crime, Vice Locker, aka Chuck Topping, just went to what used to be called the Sound Academy, and he saw a techno marching band.
Nice.
So it's an 11-piece marching band with no tracks, no DJ, with a sousaphone tuba player and a bass saxophone. And it's what's the band called, Chuck?
Mute.
They're called Mute. Oh my goodness.
Oh,
they are doing something I've never seen before. But yeah, you could jump in, Chris. You got those are your it's a rave and it's a marching band. That's,
right.
That's
his you, roots. Man.
Your favorite.
That's his roots. Just get him some ecstasy and he's good.
So Don, to answer your question, yes, I have been in a parade. And my parade story is one of the funniest moments of my life. And so when I went, Don and I went to a school called Brother Andre, a high school in Markham, and I played on the hockey team. And so we played in a tournament in Fenland Falls, which is a beautiful town northeast of Toronto, and quite northeast of Toronto. So there's a river that goes through Fenland Falls. There's only one bridge over the river. So we're in the hockey tournament. We make it to the finals of the hockey tournament. When we leave our hotel, we need to cross that bridge to get to the rink. Now, guess what day it is? It's the day of the Santa Claus parade. So we either have to drive 45 minutes south to the next bridge, back 45, and we're going to miss the game. They make a judgment call, and they put our school bus, all our hockey team, all our guys, in the parade.
Nice.
So brilliant. So all of the people from Fenland Falls were playing Fenland Falls High School in the finals, and we hang our Brother Andre hockey jerseys out the windows and go through in the Santa Claus parade as a parade float, and then we beat Fenland Falls High School and win the hockey tournament.
That screams 80s comedy movie. Yeah, like Bad News Bears or Slapshot, something like that. That's amazing.
Yeah, there were no Mooners because it was a Catholic school. No, maybe that would mean there would be more Mooners. I don't know.
Anyway, Dave Turner wasn't having any of that.
No.
Hey, listen, I know you didn't ask. You asked Tid, but I'll give you the answer too. I've been in many parades.
What?
When I was young.
Many.
When I was young, I was part of a cadet program. So marching in parades was kind of the deal. But the more interesting story, Ash, is around the same time that we were in the play, there was a girl at Brother Andre that I had a big crush on.
Ooh.
Same grade as me.
Here's the dirt, Chris. Here comes the dirt.
And she was part of a Ukrainian youth group. So I would like say to her, do you want to get together on the weekend? Oh, I can't. I have to go to my Ukrainian youth group. And I was like, oh. And she's like, yeah, we have a parade on Sunday. I mean, you could come if you want. And I'm like, yeah, I want to come to Ukrainian youth group parade. Because I'm just thinking we get to spend some time together, you know? And I thought this was going to be a real slick move on my part. And I went and showed up at this Ukrainian church and they hand me the biggest like flag that they have because I'm a big guy. And they're like, you can handle this. And everyone else has got a flag holder except me because they're like, you're big. You can handle it.
So wow.
Here I am handling this giant 20-pound flag for this massive walk. And when the parade is over, her mom shows up and goes, okay, come, we have to go. And then I'm like, I thought we were going to have a date or something. And no, okay, bye. And that was it. That was the end of that romance.
Wow. Yeah,
I commend you for that effort. crush.
Yeah. Like literally you walked into a completely racist scenario where they were like, nope, only Ukrainian, only youth, only this at this parade. And Donnie's like, I'm infiltrating. Yeah. I am going to cross the line.
Yeah. I'm going to go in.
Yeah. That was your jungle fever.
I was not letting any boundaries stop me. And then all the boundaries stopped me.
Yeah. So, one boundary. It was mom. Yeah,
one boundary. Mom. It was the ultimate boundary in grade 12. Mom got in the way. Ash, let's talk just a little bit about you had this incredible run with USS.
Yeah.
And it's impossible not to talk about it when we talk about you, because even when I was telling people that you were going to be on this show, they're all like, oh my God, I love Ash. I love US. And these are people that have never met you as far as I know. What was the moment? I know you talked about that first song that just blew up and became a smash.
Right? Oh, Hollow Point. Here, hold on one sec. I'll give you let me just give you a quick taste.
Okay, go ahead.
Just where it started off. So I was dog sitting a border collie, and have you guys seen the movie Real Genius? It was one of Val Kilmer's first movies. I had just watched the movie Real Genius. I had dated a girl from Newfoundland. So people often thought that I was from Newfoundland, but I actually dated a girl from Newfoundland. And the combination of watching the movie Real Genius, which I highly recommend, with for a sec from like 1983, hilarious. So Hollow Point, I went to bed. Actually, that night before I said, I'm going to write the best song I've ever written as soon as I wake up. And I wrote this song, Hollow Point. And it goes,
thoughts seem to stumble out of my mouth. I can't seem to stop and talk to them. Fear tries to pierce the armor of truth. Hollow point, sniper hyperbole. I can't seem to follow a pendulum, and there must be organic cures for me. Report to base, instrumental case. Here's the map to my oubliette.
I mean, come on. That's just ridiculously so good.
So I was also reading like an abnormal psychology textbook. So an oubliette is a hidden trap door that leads to a secret dungeon.
Right.
So when I say here's the map to my oubliette, that's me saying here's the map to my, you know, to what makes me real, what connects us at a point of realness.
Does your brain gave me the map to his secret trapdoor, but it was a totally different thing.
That is true.
It was a porta potty on the third day of a festival.
Does your brain scare you sometimes?
I just, you know what? I have to take a lot. Every morning I have part of waking up at 3:45 is I take an hour long Epsom salt bath. Okay. And I just open up the, I just open it up, just let it ride without try not to judge it. I've learned so much from Leonard Cohen. He's more of a scientist than people think. And so a scientist has the ability to think critically, which means you can hold two opposite ideas without having any bias.
Right.
And that's what this world we're kind of lacking right now is like that's called being open-minded. So you're able to hold both sides without having a bias. As soon as you have a bias, it's not science anymore. It's just an opinion. Mm-hmm. And anyhow,
that's a great point. Really, really intelligent point, Ash. I wanted to ask you, aside from that song blowing up,
hearing
it on the radio, having a career that basically spun out of that song, what was the moment, whether it was...
Oh, I know the answer to this question already, Don.
The moment where you looked around and said, I can't fucking believe we're here.
Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah, tell me.
So when Nirvana broke in 1991, they were actually on tour in Europe with Sonic Youth. This was before the internet. So the Smells Like Teen Spirit video had gone out into rotation on MTV in the fall of 1991. Nirvana was on tour with Sonic Youth, and they brought a couple of guys to film the tour. And they wanted to make like a VHS, like a little documentary of the tour. So they were filming Sonic Youth and Nirvana all over Europe. So they played in Nuremberg at this festival gardens and this beautiful, really, really old. What winds up happening is that Nirvana blows up in the USA while they're in Germany with Sonic Youth, but they don't know. So what winds up happening is that they put out this documentary called 1991, The Year Punk Broke. It's the documentary of Sonic Youth and Nirvana on tour in Europe in 1991 when Nirvana was blowing up unbeknownst to them. There's a scene in that documentary where they're playing to about 500 people in a festival garden in Nuremberg. And it was the in front of the stage was just like all friggin' the most beautiful plants. There's vines growing all over the whole venue. Anyways, fast forward to 2012, our friends in the band walk off the earth. When we blew up as USS, we had done shows with them, and we got them, like, we invited them into our shows. When they blew up with that five people playing one guitar, they instantly sold out a European tour. They called me and Jay. They said, we want you guys to open this tour in 2012. So we were playing sold out shows all over Europe. I see Nuremberg is on the festival run. It's on the tour run. We get to Nuremberg and it was so hectic and the time zones and the sleep, I totally forgot about the significance with Nirvana. At the end of the show, there's no one in the venue. You do what's called a dummy check, guys. So you get to the van, then you go back in one more time. You just double check everything so you don't make any reckless, any forgetfulness. I walk back out to the stage and I'm standing exactly where Kurt Cobain was standing in 1991 in the Nuremberg Festival Garden. And it like full circled that moment of, I just welled up and I just started crying with just this. It was a miraculous, magical moment of arrival where I compared every single thing I've ever done to Kurt Cobain's songs that he wrote. And it was never good enough. And nothing was ever, 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 ever good enough. And in that moment, I was able to let that go in a really powerful way, just to say that I'm okay with second place. Sometimes you're playing for bronze. Sometimes you're playing for silver, guys.
I remember.
I'm not second place. I just mean, anyways, there. So that was my moment, Don. That was my moment.
Yeah, and I can understand why that would hit you so hard. I remember, you know, again, the aforementioned play that we worked on. We were going through rehearsals when Kurt Cobain died. And I remember, like it was yesterday, you, Hilding, our friend Yana, and another friend named Sean, and the four of you just sitting on the stage crying. Like there was going to be no rehearsal that day. You guys were just beside yourselves. And I remember the teacher, the director said, what's going on? Did someone die? I said, yeah, someone died. Is a family member? I said, yeah, kind of.
You know, and what, Don? Like, as I've reflected on, you know, the youth of today don't have the same connection with music that we did. And it not, again, like a scientist, it's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It just is what it is.
Right.
What I've come to understand about, it wasn't idol worship. With Kurt Cobain specifically, when you get a sunburn, aloe vera is the most soothing thing for a sunburn. There was something about that man and his words and the melodies and that were like that felt like aloe vera. They soothed something. Nobody know. We don't know. Our minds are too small to understand why aloe vera soothes a sunburn. I don't mean that our minds are too small. I just mean that's a very specialized understanding. Right. And you come to tears at a moment like that when you lose something. It's like somebody, it's like moving to Costa Rica, somebody saying you need to stand in the sun all summer long with no clothes on, and we're taking all the aloe vera and shooting it into space. You will never have aloe vera again. You will never have anything to soothe that specific
burn.
Just yeah, that's specific discomfort. And so yeah there you, that's
it's a very eloquent way of putting it, man. You're a poet. It's very, very well stated. And you know what, my love for Nirvana has always been there. I'm so proud when I think about the fact that my almost 12-year-old son says that Nirvana is his favorite. Nirvana and Ice Cube are his favorite artists. Definitely. And you know, he loves Nirvana like there's no tomorrow. And I mentioned to you that he was the one that pointed out to me in preparing for today's interview that you guys have the same birthday, you and my son.
You know what I highly recommend your son does? Because I did this on my birthday a couple years ago for fun, because it dawned on me that nobody ever asks your birthday candle what they wish for. So what I did was I let the candle burn all the way until it blew itself out. And I let the candle have a wish for the first time. And
I think you missed it, though. I would think that the candle's first wish is to not be on fire.
I don't know. I'm not speaking. I can't speak for the candle. I don't speak that language. There are hundreds and hundreds of languages that I don't speak. And I certainly enjoyed the cherry cheesecake that went, like, if he wished for me to love the cherry cheesecake, my wish came true as a result of his wish. So
when I posted on Instagram that you were going to be joining us today, I got a repeated question from several USS fans that wanted to know this answer. And you don't have to dive deep into this, but people want to know, because USS ended in the eyes of the fans abruptly, they want to know if there is tension or if there is animosity between you and Human Kebab, or if it's all good in the hood and you guys just had to go your separate ways and do your own thing.
Yeah. You know, when you go, have you been to Cora's, that breakfast place?
Yeah.
So when you finish your breakfast, right, maybe you have some coffee left in your cup or you have some water left in your glass. So maybe you finish your breakfast and they clear your plates, and then you finish your water, and then they come and they say, do you need anything else? You say, no. Do you want some more coffee? No, thank you. So the waitress leaves. You take your last few swigs of coffee. Thank you very much. Waitress comes. Anything else to get you? No, just the bill. Thanks. Right on. Brings the bill. You pay your bill. You don't just sit at the table for another week. That's the end of the meal. And you know it's the end of the meal. You've ate your food. You drank your water, you finished your coffee, you paid the bill, you gave her a tip. You maybe even went on Google, gave them 5 stars because the waitress was very kind. She remembered that you said, can you make my home fries crispy and well done? And she remembered it amongst all her busyness. And there's all these things going on. There's all these other tables. There's all this stuff happening. And maybe you farted in the car on the way there. And, you know, and I'm just kidding. Anyhow, pulling it all together, you just know that the meal's finished. And okay. You don't just sit in the restaurant for another week. So the meal was finished and we had a beautiful meal. There's an incredible quote, guys, that the guitar player from the Tragically Hip said, when Gord Downie got sick, and they did that, one of my favorite documentaries, that's why I thanked Gord Downie, because that man means the world to me. And he said, the guitar player said, a band is like a hot air balloon. And it goes up, and it's not very often that the fans get to be a part of the descent, the safe descent, where you just very calmly exit the hot air balloon. It doesn't just explode in a friggin' ball of fire, and it's like it's the end. And in a lot of ways, with how we got to go out on those terms, with when the meal was finished, we got to do 2 shows at History, one of the most phenomenal venues in Toronto, mm-hmm. with the most phenomenal lights, with the most phenomenal sound, and it was pretty magic. That's my answer to that question, Don.
That's a great answer. You have the soul of a poet, my friend. Leonard Cohen is smiling right now.
Don.
Yes, sir.
I'd really love to. You touched on it. I really appreciate this opportunity to. Connect meaningfully in this way and put these pieces together. To pull this together now, where we've arrived at is this this Fraxinus Prime character. So what happened is that I had a wonderful girlfriend who was going to Niagara College, and she was taking horticulture. So on the weekend, we go to the tree library, which is a park that has all the trees labeled and all the Latin names. And so you can walk through a forest. It's like a tree library, and you can know what all the different trees are. So Fraxinus is actually the Latin word for ash.
I was saying that to Tid before we came on the air.
So I was like, I'm going to be Fraxinus. And then I was watching hockey with my parents, and a Transformers commercial came on, and I saw Optimus Prime, and I go, you know what? I'm going to be Fraxinus Prime, because I'm like the characters from The Breakfast Club, and I got to be okay with it. I just change into different things, and that's who I am. So what's super exciting is that my first post USS release is coming up next week. We're putting out our new song. It's called Control Alt Delete, and we're going to be playing it we're throwing Intimate and Electronic 2, guys, our second adult rave, which is at the Redwood Theater in Toronto. This theater is about 120 years old. Houdini performed there. Charlie Chaplin performed there. It's just a wild, wacky, weird, wonderful place. And we're starting it at 6 p.m. We have an experimental violin player. We have a reggae DJ. We have me and Weisslocker are doing a set. I'm doing an acoustic set. Which I'm super stoked on. I'm going to be playing some USS classics. There's going to be butterfly wings, and there's going to be lollipops, and there's going to be a hug station, and there's going to be, we're going to make a community for a night, and that's what's going on.
I love that. I want to ask you about, and I mentioned it in the introduction, the birth of Fraxinus Prime that happened.
Yeah.
In that hospital room. And I know that Tid can relate to this on a level that I cannot, because like you, Tid almost lost his life to a severe staph infection.
Wow. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy crow. Yeah. Yeah. That was, so basically, I kind of get, day-to-day life, and I love water. Okay. I take about 3 ice cold showers every day. I have an Epsom salt bath every morning. I've been to most of the waterfalls in Ontario. Everywhere we go, I bring my bathing suit. I just jump in. But so I was in the shower drinking a mug of root beer. And this was last spring. The mug slipped out of my hand. I broke the mug. I got a little cut right here. And then the next day, my hand was swollen up like this big. I go into emergency at St. Joseph's Hospital, and they looked at my hand and they rushed me into emergency surgery. And as I'm lying on the table, they basically sliced open my palm and were sucking the staff. They were hammering antibiotics. They didn't tell me at the time, but they were like, yeah, you were like a couple hours from that hand being gone. If you had waited till tomorrow morning, you might, like, we're not going to say that you might have died, but there's a good chance that thing gets to your heart and you're dead. So as I'm lying on the table, I see a Bluetooth speaker, right, Chris? So I said to the nurse, I go, hey, do you mind if I DJ? She goes, yeah, no, go ahead. So in this hand, I got my iPhone and I get on the Bluetooth and I start DJing my surgery. So they didn't have time to intubate me. They didn't have time to put me under. So they just froze my hand in the operating room and I'm DJing on this side and I keep turning it up and the nurse keeps telling me to turn it down. Every time she turns it, I turn it up a bit more. So I'm like, I'm just pumping my favorite electronic music. As I'm doing it, it just came over me. I started singing my favorite Nirvana songs, my favorite Oasis songs, my favorite Coldplay songs. It was like I was just trying to diffuse the friggin' like holy fuckness of the situation.
Yeah. It's time for Ashley's surgery.
So basically what winds up happening, Chris, is that they said you might never like be able to use your finger again. Like for 3 months, I couldn't bend it. I couldn't play the guitar. So I just started doing what I did in the operating room and I started playing all my favorite drum and bass music, all my favorite electronic music. And I just started singing for the first time in my life without a guitar. Like I was MC at a rave, but it was like Kurt Cobain or Chris Martin or Noel Gallagher being the MC and actually singing an incredible song over electronic music. So what winds up happening is Chuck Topping, AKA Vice Locker, and I wound up getting back together and he's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, when I was on the operating room table and I thought I was going to die, I was doing this. It was pretty cool. He's like, well, let's do that. So we wound up recording an album for the first time. I wasn't playing the guitar. I've only ever played the guitar. So this sort of vulnerability, dare I use the word, of just standing with a microphone and not having this thing that I'm kind of like a shield in front of me has just been like, so now when I'm really channeling my like Leonard Cohen and Gord Downie, who are just two masters of just being there. They are there and only there. They're not somewhere else. They're not trying to impress you. They're not trying to like, not that they're not. Anyhow, this is what this Fraxinus Prime grow, this evolution of who I am. That's the origin of this. And it's just been, I just have put on my seatbelt and I'm just going for the ride. It's scaring the shit out of me, but I don't have a choice. Like a beaver has to chew wood. They just have to do it. I don't know what's at the top of the tree. The beaver doesn't know what's at the top until the tree falls down. And so, you know, I'm just chewing the wood and I'm chewing the wood with you guys here. So
you can chew our wood anytime.
So what happened with you, Chris? What was your staff infection all about?
So I had about 6,000 pounds of steel come off the side of a truck, hit me in the chest, and then came down on my leg. It was still connected to the boom of the forklift that was taking it off of the truck. That's the only thing that stopped it from not cutting my leg off completely. So when it came down, double compound tibia and fibula on my left leg, out the front, and
tell them where your calf muscle was.
My knee was pointed sideways. The front muscle on your shin was hanging out, and I could see the bottoms of my toes. Okay. So they take me to the hospital. They do the, you know, we're in there, right? They give me the minimal amount of Toradol on the, you know, trip to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm digging my fingers up to my second knuckle into my eye sockets to try to divert, you know, situation, try to divert the situation, right?
Little bit of a different technique than I use, but it was a strategy. You went with it.
We get to the hospital. My wife shows up with her friend and stuff. She's freaking out. I'm like, I'm okay. Everything's fine. I look at her friend, Pauline, that drove her there or whatever. First thing I say to her is, did you bring your camera? She goes, you know, I did. I said, excellent. We're going to have to get pictures of all of this stuff. So we started documenting all of this for the pictures. I ended up having to go through 3 surgeries in 7 days. Because they couldn't get the front of the leg closed up again. You know what I mean? After they just kind of shoved the muscle back in there. Yeah. About a year later, because I had a rod in my leg, I was having issues with it. So rod's got to come out. Do the surgery. It's supposed to be a 45-minute surgery. It takes 4 hours. They finally get this rod out of my leg. I'm healing up. It's about a month after on the healing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my knee is feeling like on the incision part, feeling a little warm, a little, you know, to the touch, a little inflamed or whatever. Starts getting a little swollen. And then I'm in the shower one morning and I bend my leg and my knee explodes. Ooh. Like it literally just exploded and all of this like toxic Avenger stuff starts coming out the front of my leg. I'm like, that's not good. Off we go. They start sticking me on, you know, whatever antibiotics to start. Find out I'm allergic to all of them.
That's a tough time for that kind of declaration.
So to the point where I've got to wear a hip sack at this point that has an antibiotic bag that they're running IV into my arm 24 hours a day for 2 weeks straight. The nurse would come to either I was at home where I was supposed to be, or I was at work where I was not supposed to be. And she would change it up for me every single day for 2 weeks straight, almost 3 weeks to get this infection to go away.
And that's how the notorious TID was. The birth of the notorious TID.
Oh, that's
hold on. And then the sleeves of your shirt ripped off to a permanent tank top, and your goatee just grew out, and you're like notorious
TID. Yeah, yeah. Well, they say what doesn't kill you. They say what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. I guess. Right.
What I'm trying to figure out is Ash gets a staph infection, nearly dies, forms this brilliant musical project. You got a staph infection, nearly died. All you did was want peanut butter and pot.
I was gonna say Arby's.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys something hilarious? There was the only Arby's in the whole GTA is in Oshawa. That's true. There was a protest at that Arby's. Guess what the protest was for? Wait for it. The protest was for why there aren't more Arby's.
Yeah. I know the guy who ran that protest. He was a former guest on this show.
Yeah. John Tard.
John Tard ran that protest. Punk rock legend, John Tard.
That's the greatest protest in the history of the GTA, as far as I'm concerned. Like, Even if you're vegan, who else has got seasoned curly fries? You know, even though half of them are soggy and you get the crispy ones here and there. But hey, do you want the sneak preview on our new track, Control Alt Delete?
I would love nothing more.
Okay, so just bear with for one moment. This is my first time playing it. I just have to get my little reference here. Oh, by the way, guys, this guitar, for all you parents out there, when I was graduating high school, my parents saw how hard I worked at music, how dedicated I was, how much I was committed to practicing, and how seriously I was taking it. And my stepdad took me down to Steve's, the guitar shop. Mm-hmm. And he just said, Ash, play all the guitars, and whichever one you feel connected to, that's going to be your instrument. And so I've had this guitar since high school, and it's just the most beautiful instrument. And actually, this is going to be, I've never actually recorded with this guitar. We're going to record Control Alt Delete with this guitar. I'm doing like a spooky lullaby version. So one of the other kind of areas of the way that I'm going to be creating and moving forward is more in alignment with this kind of a bit of a calmer, more grounded kind of version of who I am. And I'm playing a lot of spooky lullabies, as I call them. So I'm going to do the spooky lullaby version of Control Alt Delete.
I love it.
Okay, so let me just get the reference point here.
Very Leonard Cohen.
Okay, here we go. Shadows on the moon from the moon. Okay.
Shadows on loan from the moon, the weightlessness, Smurf house makes Zoom a call. Green means go, so I went. The rent is spent, get straight, get bent, stall. Control-alt-delete. From the moon, the weightlessness, Smurf house makes Zoom a call. Green means go, so I went. The rent is spent, get straight, get bent, install. Never mind the beakers and tubes. Hypothesize, we guess, we assume control. Stepping up, stepping in, mind the spin. Look yourself in the eye and try.
Come on, this guy's a rock star. Jesus, dude, that is fantastic.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the acoustic version. So what you'll be hearing is what we call jungle punk, which is like jungle drum and bass. So
very cool.
There you go. So bringing the punk rock to the rave scene.
Ted, I know you're picky with what you like, but what'd you think?
I was tapping along.
Yeah.
I like a good acoustic jam, though, too. You know what I mean? Yeah. I there's just a lot more, for me anyways, there's a lot more feeling. When you mention like your artists out off the gate, you know, who you had your shout outs to, every single one of those has a huge acoustic side to everything that they do.
Well, that's what again is another big full circle, guys, is I started my life in music at campfires at my cottage, playing Our Lady Peace, playing Trouble Charger, playing Beck, playing Radiohead, playing Nirvana, and that's my, like, that's in my DNA. That is like the absolute, like, the nucleus of who I am. So what's super fun is that simultaneous to Fraxinus Prime and the work I'm doing with Vice Locker, which I'm so super stoked about because it's really the truest, the closest I've ever come to fulfilling that, the raves that I was exposed to as a kid and the grunge alternative rock. But what I'm doing now for the first time simultaneous to that, guys, is playing my acoustic guitar, just me playing my acoustic guitar. And I've written an album of all new songs, but you know, there's some USS songs. There's one called Kit. I do this spooky lullaby version of our song called Work Shoes. People don't really realize that, like, this is how Work Shoes, the USS song, this is how the song went when I wrote it. So that song's just like a big stomp clap.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get psyched about life. Let's pull ourselves up. But this is how that song was written.
I'm about to rise, I'm about to shine, I'm about to leave this all behind. I'm about to check, I'm about to change, I'm about to realign, connect and rearrange. Howling at the moon, kryptonite the sun, been living in the days for weeks and months and years. I'm done. The ace is in the base, the silencer's to stop. Well, I'm about to drop, and my heart sings.
I just write lullabies. I don't yell in my room and jump around. I'm just soothing, you know, I'm soothing the whole situation. So I'm so excited, guys, to feel like I'm enough that I can just sit with my guitar like that, you know? Because in a lot of ways, when I started making this kind of music, I was trying to get, okay, here's some more insider information. When I started playing music, guys, I hadn't, because of Crohn's disease, I didn't start puberty till I was like 17. I had, right. My voice was so high pitched. I hated the sound of my voice. Everyone.
And you like, were small too.
Yeah, I was
you
tiny. Everyone made fun of me. They made fun of my voice. So I hated my voice. So even as I started singing and writing songs and working on music, which is just this, the same thing with going to the monastery, I just saw a guitar and just had to play it, and just these songs started happening. But I always hated my voice. So the USS thing really came out of the fact that I was like, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, now we can get all these synthesizers and drum machines and a million instruments going, so no one will notice how awful my voice is. So a lot of times in life, some, like a lot of great art comes from overcompensation. People are overcompensating for what they perceive as weakness, but it winds up creating their strength. So in my case, I became this hyper maximalist producer because, right, I was trying to distract people because no one knew that I hated my voice. So, wow, if you even listen to our song Hollow Point, there's 200 things going on. There's also me singing right in the middle of it somewhere. And so this journey that I've been on, Chris, when you asked me and Dom why I go to monasteries and things like that, is because I had to weed out a monologue, an inner monologue that was narrating the wrong movie. So basically, essentially, I couldn't sit with my guitar and play for anybody because I my voice is awful, and this is disgusting. There's nothing to hide from that. It's right out in the open. And so I have worked so diligently. When you asked me at the beginning, Don, why I haven't done podcasts, is because what I've had to do on a day-to-day basis just to get my out the door every day and at a baseline of just getting into life. And so as a testament to the work I've done and the growth that I've accomplished and I'm so thankful for all of the people and my family and friends that have just been so patient with me, that to arrive at this point now where I can sing a lullaby and connect and not close my eyes. And like, so at the Intimate and Electronic show, it's my birthday too. And it's like the best birthday ever. I'm playing a fucking 14 song acoustic set of lullabies. And that's like, I'm so excited to be, you know, it doesn't necessarily just apply to addiction, but they say addiction is a disease of selfishness. And we're all addicted to lots of things in our own ways. And in a way, like in the ways that I've been addicted to selfishness, the greatest gift that I could ever receive is actually not, is for me to give this music to everybody. So on my birthday, my present is the ability to give this these lullabies to everybody.
Ash, this is incredible. And honestly, first of all, in case you haven't wrapped your head around this at this point, your voice is phenomenal. I'm trying to figure out what it's going to cost to have you sit on a stool next to my bed and play guitar so that I can fall asleep on those nights when I have insomnia.
Hey, guess what? I just got my first SoundCloud page today. And I love that. All of this music will be available to ASMR you to sleep, Don.
I love that.
You know what?
Until I get up on SoundCloud, guess what I found today, Ash? Look at this.
Oh, wow. Nobody has one of those.
Nobody has one of these, except very few people. And I was talking to Ash about this earlier today. This was one of Ash's earlier bands, Quicksonic. Your brother Adam was in this band too. And I was such a fan of this music. And yeah. Tid, when I tell you that this sound, what year would this have been, Ash, when you put this out?
That was 2001.
So when I tell you at this time, Tid, when this came out, I had never heard anything like it. Huh. The sound was so different and so unique. I played this, like the back is destroyed.
Don. Hey, Chuck, can you pass me the... Well, I have a special surprise for Don, Chris. Is there are three known copies of this album, and Don is about to get this one.
Wow. Oh, I love it. Look at that. I miss the artwork. I don't have the case anymore.
Well, I was such a stoner when we made this that like four of the six songs are about weed. And what's really, Don asked me when we were chatting, when we were connecting, it was just so nice to connect with Don, because I don't like this seminal, like absolute, the incubator of my musical life. I've just never talked about it with anybody, maybe Hilding, one guy. And I'm because I've been so solitary and so monastic, on Instagram, I see all of these incredible guys I played hockey with, I played sports with, that I played music with in high school. And I'm just so excited to reconnect with that, with these people. And so this album, Don bringing this album up, because no one ever talks about it, we sold about 10 of them. And it was before the internet. So they just like didn't go anywhere. But on this album is the last track here. It's called Heightened Perspective. And this was the first song that I ever used a computer to make music in my life, which was sort of like the cornerstone of what would become the USS music. My brother got into a guy called, you know, your brother, if you guys had older brothers, people that have older brothers, they go to university. This was before the internet. And then they'd come back with all this new music from all the people that they met. So my brother came back with this guy called Desmond Decker, who's the godfather of ska, before Bob Marley even. And he had this style on the guitar where Desmond Decker would go like this. Like the guy would be like. So if you notice with Hollow Point, when I played it, it goes. The scene. So my brother, that's what this Quicksonic CD was. All of a sudden, I was listening to all this reggae and this ska music. My sister had gone and worked at a camp. And have you guys ever heard of a guy called G Love and Special Sauce?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there, she left a tape in our car by G Love. And G Love was like a Beck kind of really soulful speak rapping, melodic speak rap kind of dude. And between the Desmond Decker and the G Love, all of a sudden I'm like, this is the first song. I'll play this for Dawn. The first song is called Funk Flash. And so people don't know this, guys, but I was a rapper first.
I was in
a band called Deusomnia, and we were a rapper. And this was one of the first raps I ever wrote, which turned into Funk Flash that goes, how's it go? I got magic in my fingertips. I'm profound. I got a sound to get your mom doing backflips. I'll put the grooves in your dancing shoes. So don't wait. Don't hesitate to let your heart dictate your fate. I met a girl just the other day. I said, hey, she said, yo. I said, hey, she said, yo. I know who puts the grooves in your dancing shoes. So if you got it, step up. But if you don't, you better listen up. Cause if you don't got the groove on, well, I suggest you get a move on, son. And if you can't feel that funk flash, well, I suggest you take a lesson from Ash.
I fucking love that song, Ashley. I can't even.
And my brother was playing in a reggae band with all these old Jamaican guys and learning how to play the.
Oh, my God.
So all of a sudden, my brother comes back from university. He's a reggae drummer. I've just been like inundated with, I loved Beck so much. My band, Deusomnia, we covered Old Dirty Bastard. We covered House of Pain. We covered Jurassic 5. We covered Wu-Tang Clan. We like Shimmy Shimmy Y'all Shimmy Yim. Like when you come, if you know, people come to the show, I've reconnected with my like when you, okay, basically what I fell in love with about hip hop was you could be so playful with the words. Like we had the song called Three Purple Butterflies, and I'm like I got to be so expressive with words in a way that I couldn't with just songs. Three purple butterflies smiling at me with the alligator eyes just shooting the breeze. She said, find the lines to connect the dots. The pans and the pots turn themselves into robots. Little ladybug. And so it was just like so exciting to listen to rap music, but then to add melody to it. And so it that's like what I'm doing with the Fraxinus Prime stuff is like is connecting with those roots too.
I love it. I have to tell you.
Awesome.
It hurts my soul a little bit that I can't make it out to the Redwood Theater on May 11th. I'll have my son with me, and I'm sure it's not an all ages event. So,
Dom, we'll get you on the guest list for Intimate and Electronic 3.
Okay. Listen, there's nothing I want more right now, Ash, than to come and see you do your thing live. The first chance I get where it fits the schedule, I promise you I will be there.
Oh, dude, that would be so wonderful. You and Hilding will have to come
together. We'll drag Tid out too, even though he doesn't like to leave home.
No, we'll live stream it. So you can watch the live stream.
It's that, better than having me there anyways.
Yeah, he's miserable. Redwood Theater on May 11th. Please check them out. We'll put up more information on godfathersofpodcasting.com. You can check out Fraxinus Prime. It's going to be a fantastic event. Go check out the Hug Station and everything else that they've got going on. I am so sorry.
And Control-Alt-Delete and checking out our Jungle Punk. I'm really super excited to get people checking out Control-Alt-Delete.
I love it.
Super
Ash
rad.
Ash Schultz, thanks, guys. So much for joining us, man.
Oh, hey, can I just do some shout outs to finish off here?
Sure.
Okay, just give me one sec here. I'd like to shout out my man Vice Locker, aka Chuck Topping. I'd like to shout out Jeremy, Tim. I'd like to shout out Justin McWilliams. I'd like to shout out Josh Thomas, Todd, Sean, Eric, Dad, Mom, Adam, Sandy, Mandy, Brian McKenzie, Jonathan, Craig, Jonathan, Simone, Neil, Hilding. I'd also like to shout out Kenny. I'd like to shout out Steph, and I'd like to shout out Brett, and I'd like to shout out everybody who is just putting in some fucking effort. Like, just put in some fucking effort.
Hold on. Did you just mention your whole family except your sister?
That goes without saying. I talk to my family every single day.
I just didn't want you to get in trouble. That's all.
No.
All right. There he is, everybody. Ashley Buchholz, Fraxinus Prime. It has been our pleasure, my friend. There he goes, Tid. What a brain on that guy, huh?
Amazing story, amazing journey, and it sounds like it's not even close to getting to the middle part of the chapters.
One of the people who I can tell you I've come across in my travels that I consider to be a true, true musical genius. And after this conversation tonight, I think people realize that his level of enlightenment is levels above most of us plebeians. Like he has a view on the world that is just so inspiring and so refreshing, and it's fascinating to listen to, and I'm sure you took something away from it too.
He's definitely dealing with an artistic brain that I can only imagine, because I don't have it, and you either have it or you don't, and that's the thing. It's something that I've come across a few times, and to try to understand it is not going to happen. All you can do is just enjoy the time and the space around people like that, and you know, never ever take it for granted, because their gift that they're willing to give to everybody is greater than you can even imagine. So
if you listen to this week's episode on any podcast provider anywhere in the world, you may want to go to godfathersofpodcasting.com and watch the full video, because I promise you, this is one that you're going to want to have the opportunity to see and not just to hear. Make sure you go to baronialbeard.com for all your facial products and beard needs. Go to Black Bork USA, get a sweet little hat like this one. Many different colors, many different styles. You can choose from hundreds of patches that are removable from their website, or you can get your own and have it uploaded to them, and they will make it all up and make it super sweet. If you are an organization, a company that wants to sponsor and support the Godfathers of Podcasting, you can contact us, info@godfathersofpodcasting.com. Or maybe you don't have the cash to invest and you just want us to feature some of your really cool products, you think we would like them, you can send us an email, info@godfathersofpodcasting.com. If your product interests us, we can work something out. That's Tid.
Yo,
I'm Donnie. This is episode 174, I think. Okay. And we are done this party. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of
fuck
here.
This shit, I'm